All right, good evening, everyone. So first of all, yashikach to everyone. I think this afternoon we're struggling whether or not to keep the shiur, to cancel the shiur. Baruch Hashem, everything cleared up. And I know it's probably not so simple driving. Weather conditions are not the best, but yashikach to everyone for coming out. And hopefully we'll have a beautiful and a meaningful opportunity to learn together this evening. So we're going to focus tonight on what I think everybody has a sheet. There are sheets in the entranceway. There are sheets by the bima. Okay. So we're going to focus on tonight what I think is a fascinating episode from the parasha. The truth is, the greatest challenge in all of the parashios of Bereishis is to try to figure out what to focus on. Because there are so many intriguing events and so many just absolutely amazing episodes and so many just cathartic events that occur that sometimes it's really hard. You can't do everything in the 3 hours that we have together tonight. Just kidding. Right? So yeah, I have to choose one thing. But hopefully, I think what we end up seeing over the course of these parashios is that sometimes the insights that we gain from one particular episode tend to shed light on a number of other episodes throughout the parasha as well. So let's begin with number one. So of course, Parashas Vayichi is dramatic for a number of reasons. It's dramatic, of course, because it's the last parasha in Bereishis. But really what makes it dramatic is that Parashas Vayichi represents the close of the generation of the Avos and the Imos. This is the end of the chapter of the matriarchs and the patriarchs. Sefer Bereishis is a story about individuals. The rest of the books of the Torah are the story of the collective. So here in this parasha, we see in a number of dramatic places how the Torah transitions again from the narrative of the individual ultimately to the narrative of the collective. And there's no more poignant example of this than when Yaakov Avinu blesses his children on his deathbed. This is not the first time that we see a parent blessing a child before they leave this world, but this is the first time that we really see a parent. If you look at the brachos that Yaakov Avinu gives his children before he leaves this world, the truth is, they're not really brachos about them. They're not brachos about the children themselves. What are they brachos about? Their future destiny. Right? He doesn't say, Reuven, you're a good guy because of this. Shimon, he tells Reuven, he speaks about, perhaps he does speak specifically about their shortcomings, about some of their sinful behaviors, but the essence of the brachos is to foreshadow the tribal destiny of each and every child. Yaakov Avinu on his deathbed, his parting message to his children, which is one of the most amazing messages that a parent can give a child, is you are destined for greatness. You are going to become something magnificent, not just in your own lifetime, but ultimately in the generations to come as well. So take a look at number one. Ve'ato shnei banecha noladim lecha be'eretz Mitzrayim, ad bo'im elecha Mitzrayim. So now, Torah over here is referring to a specific conversation that Yaakov has with Yosef. And he says to Yosef, your two sons that were born to you in Egypt before I came to you, before I joined you in Egypt, efliyein, they're mine. They're mine. Now what that means, we'll have to see. They're mine. Ephraim u'Menashe, Keruvein v'Shimon yihiyuli. Your two sons that were born to you in Egypt will be to me just like my own sons. On the most basic level, what is Yaakov Avinu saying? That your children be like my... What does that mean practically? That your children will assume a tribal identity just like your brothers. But Yosef, should you have any more children from this point on, this idea that your children become my children, that your children will assume a tribal identity that is unique for Ephraim and Menashe. Any subsequent offspring that you may have, those children will be subsumed under the tribal umbrella of Ephraim and Menashe. Number two. This is all, again, I broke up the psukim, but just understand, I'm giving you the entire section in succession. So, number two follows directly after number one. I know that doesn't sound like a very profound statement, but I mean, again, I'm not skipping any psukim. I'm not skipping any verses in the conveyance of the story. So what does Yaakov Avinu say? Va'ami bivawimi padan, meso alai rachel be'eretz kinan. So, and I, when I was coming back from Padan Aram is the home of Lavan. So Yaakov Avinu now launches into a historical reminiscence. And when I was coming back from Lavan's home, Meisa alai Rachel, Rachel died immediately, but suddenly, baderech, while we were traveling, ba'od kivras eretz lavo efrasa, while there was still a stretch of land to come to Efrat, ve'ekberah sham baderech Efrat, he beis lochem. And I buried her there on the road to Efrat, that is beis lechem. Okay, still a continuation. Plus number three. Now I did skip a couple of psukim. Vayichach Yosef es shnehem es Ephraim b'minom l'smol Yisrael v'es Menashe b'smolo mi'min Yisrael v'yagesh elav. So of course the famous episode. So now after Yaakov told Yosef that your two sons Menashe and Ephraim are going to be like Reuven and Shimon, so Yaakov says, "Let me bless them." So Reuven brings. You have to conjure up in your mind the image here. So Yosef brings his two sons Ephraim and Menashe to Yosef's father, to Yaakov, to their Zeda, for a bracha. And he arranges them in a specific order. Es Menashe bismolo mi min Yisrael. Menashe, who is the firstborn, is coming on Yosef's left side, in order that he will be positioned by Yaakov Avinu's right hand. As Ephraim b'miyamino mismolo Yisrael, so again, Torah goes out of order. He puts Ephraim, who was the younger child, the younger son, in his right hand, Yosef's right, so therefore brings him to Yaakov's left, and he brings Menashe, the older son, in Yosef's left, which will be Yaakov's right. Vayagesh elav. And again, the intention is, right, the right hand always has more chashivos, always has greater importance, and therefore the assumption is that Yaakov will put his right hand on the Bechor, on the firstborn, and his left hand on Ephraim, the youngest child. Vayishlach Yisrael es yimino, vayoshes al rosh Ephraim, behu atzayir, ve'es smolo al rosh Menashe, sikel es yodav ki Menashe ha-Bechor. So what does Yaakov Avinu do? He switches his hands. And Yaakov ends up putting his right hand on the younger son Ephraim, and his left hand on the older son Menashe. Number four, Vayar Yosef ki yoshes yod yemino al rosh Ephraim, vayera be'enav. Now, the truth is, we could give a whole shiur just on number four, because the response of Yosef is quite intriguing. Yosef sees what his father did, and what's he almost has like a visceral reaction. What does the Torah say? Vayera be'enav. Vayera be'enav means what? It was ra. It was ra. That's a very strong wording. It was bad in it. Why was it so bad in his eyes? Because Yosef, more than anyone, saw the negative familial byproduct of favoritism. He saw what happens when a parent switches up the normal familial order and begins to favor younger children over older children. It appears that his father is doing the same exact thing now with the grandchildren. So vayera be'enav. And how do you know that it was so terrible in Yosef's eyes? He does something that the truth is would at first glance appear somewhat chutzpedik. What does he do? Vayismoch yad aviv lahasir oso me'al rosh Ephraim al rosh Menashe. What does he do? He literally goes in to move his father's hand. He doesn't say, "Dad, I think maybe he got mixed up." He literally goes in to manipulate his father's hand. That's how wrong this whole thing feels. And now Yosef verbalizes it. "No, my father, this is not right. This one is the older one. Menashe is the older one. Put your right hand on his hand." Yaakov refused. "Vayomer yadati bini yadati. I know what I'm doing. Gam hu yihya la'am. This older son Menashe will also become a great nation. Gam hu yigdal, he will also become great. V'ulam achiv hakaton yigdal mimenu. But the younger brother will eclipse the older one. He'll become even greater. Ephraim will become even greater than Menashe. V'zaro yie melo agoyim. And ultimately his offspring and his children's fame will fill the nations. V'yivarechim b'yom ahu lemor. And therefore again he blessed them. He blessed them on that day saying, Becha Yivarech Yisrael. With you, the Jewish people will bless, and they will say, Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim eche Menashe. God should make you like Ephraim and Menashe, Vayosem es Ephraim lifnei Menashe. And what did Yaakov Avinu do? Yaakov actively, both physically as well as verbally, places Ephraim before Menashe. And Rashi HaKadosh comments in number 5, Bechoy Yivarech Yisrael, what does that mean? That through you, the Jewish people will bless, that you should be like Ephraim Menashe. So Rashi says, Haba Levarech Ezbanov, if one comes to bless his children, what blessing, what's the appropriate blessing that a Jewish parent gives to children? Yivarechim Bevirchasam Vayomer Ish Libno, a person should say to his son, Yisimcha Elokim Ke Ephraim Uchim Menashe. That whenever we want to bless our children, we use this formulation. If I want my child to have good role models, spiritual role models, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should make you like Ephraim and Menashe. So there are two fundamental questions we're going to focus on over here tonight. Number one, question number one, has to do with source number two. In the middle of this whole discussion about Menashe and Ephraim, so remember the narrative. In sources 1, 3, and 4, what's happening? Yaakov Avinu A tells Yosef that what's the status of his sons? What's the status? Menashe and Ephraim, Kiruven and Shimon, they're tribes. Information number one. Piece of information number two is what? I'll give you a hint. We just read it 20 seconds ago. This is what happens when I give you guys off 2 weeks. See? Right? Is that again? Ephraim's going to be greater than Menashe. That's piece of information number two. They're both going to be great, but the younger one will surpass the older one. And in the middle of this whole conversation about Menashe and Ephraim, Yaakov Avinu seems to introduce a totally extraneous piece of information, which is number two. Why does Yaakov Avinu bring up the discussion about the death of Rachel Imenu now? Why does this matter? Now, I want to point something out. Yaakov brings it up. Yaakov's talking in number two. Yaakov is talking the whole time until Yosef talks at the end of number four. So the question is, why does Yaakov bring this up now? This has nothing to do with the story. Now later on, Yaakov will make another reference to this when he asks about burial in Eretz Yisrael. That's a little bit more intuitive. But here, in the middle of the discussion of Yosef's sons, Yaakov feels the need to recount the story about the sudden death of Rachel Imenu, the inability, bless you, the inability to bury her in what we'll call the familial plot in Maras HaMachpelah, and that she's buried in the middle of nowhere. What does that, question number one is, why is this brought up here? What does this have to do with the story? And fundamental question number two is, it's interesting, because if you think about it, we have so many incredible role models in our Chumash. It's fascinating that we choose to bless our children that they should be like Ephraim and Menashe. Out of all the biblical figures we could have chosen, how much do we know about Ephraim and Menashe? What do we know about them? Pretty much we know that their names were Ephraim and Menashe. That's about all we know textually. We'll discuss what we know, perhaps midrashically. We'll get into that a little bit later. But all we know we know about them nothing textually. We know that they're Yosef and Osnat's children. We know that they're born in Egypt. That's all. That's all. We know they become tribes. We learn nothing in the Chumash that speaks to the nature, to the integrity, to the identity of these two young men that should make them the paradigm for spiritual accomplishment. That's when we bless our children. Remember, when you give a bracha to your children, you know what you're saying? I'm saying to my children, I want you to be like this. I want you to be like them. That's an incredible statement. That's an incredible thing to say. So the question becomes, why were these two chosen out of everyone else? So there are a number of different approaches to this. Take a look at number 6. So this is from the Sefer Igra de Kalo. So the author here writes the following. He says, quite a fascinating idea. He says, V'lama yisparchu b'nei Yisrael dafka bohem v'lo b'shar shvotim. So he asks a simple question. Why don't we say that you should be like Shimon and Levi? Right? Why don't we say that you should be like any of the other, be like Yehuda and Yisachar? Why do we dafka choose Ephraim and Menashe? So he writes the following. This is probably the most well-known answer to this particular question. He writes, Yisod choshuv b'musar hayadus hu lo lehisgaos al azulas v'lo lekanebo. One of the most important things that we have within Judaism is the idea that we do not lord over anyone else, nor do we go ahead and harbor jealousy towards them. What the Igra de Kala is saying is like this, that part of what we believe, it's interesting, in Judaism, we don't believe that all people are created equal. We countercultural, but not all people are created equal. Not everybody has the same rights, and I know this is going to come as an incredible shock. Not everybody has a say. Not everybody's opinion matters, and not everybody's voice should be heard. I know very undemocratic principles, but the principles of Judaism nevertheless. We have different stations, we have different roles, we have different responsibilities, and that's the way it's supposed to be. The trick is not to allow myself to ever feel any more superior to someone else, perhaps because I do occupy a more exalted status, or perhaps because I've accomplished more, or I'm responsible for more. We never use personal greatness to go ahead and lehisgaus, to have gaiva, to have arrogance over someone else. Not only that, one of the things we train ourselves in is that when someone else accomplishes something, and even if that person's accomplishment allows them to surpass me, I work on myself to what? To not be jealous or to begrudge them that accomplishment. Kishi Yaakov ra'a ki afa pi shebicher es Ephraim hatzoir lifnei Menashe habechor b'chol zos lo hisgaya Ephraim al Menashe u'Menashe lo niskana b'Ephraim. So the Igre Dekala makes a fascinating observation here. He says you have to look at the story in its progression. What happens first? Yaakov Avinu tells Yosef, your sons are going to be like Shvatim. Ephraim, Menashe, Keruvein, Shimon. That's piece of information number one. What's piece of information number two? Number two? Ephraim is going to be greater than Menashe. The moment that Yaakov Avinu says that, and what is he? He sees two things. Number one is that Ephraim does not lord over Menashe, meaning you would think the most natural thing for a younger brother, after hearing that he is going to be greater than his older sibling would be what? Right? A little smirk, right? A little shtach, a little eye. I always knew it. You know, mom always told me she liked me better. Whatever it is, you would have expected some type of gaiva. But yet, amazingly enough, Ephraim doesn't do that to Menashe. Not only that, but what happens? Menashe does not begrudge Ephraim for his newfound status. So according to the Igre Dekala, what happens is something amazing. Yaakov Avinu sees this unfolding right in front of him. And therefore, Omer Yaakov, Halevai v'chol b'nei Yisrael yiyu kacha. Halevai that the Jewish people should always emulate this model. Mishloei gaiva v'kina. They should be totally bereft, void of any kind of arrogance towards one another, or any kind of jealousy. V'yosim es Ephraim lifnei Menashe. Who efa perush ala bracha yisimcha elokim kefraim kemenasha. There's something amazing that comes out from this, and I'll tell you, I always understood the story differently. You see, when I always read this story, I always assumed that Yaakov Avinu knew where this was going to end up when he started. It was always the plan, meaning Yaakov already knew the punchline. The punchline was going to be that Jews for all generations will bless their children, that you should be like Menashe and Ephraim. Vigur Dekala says, no, Yaakov Avinu didn't know the punchline. Yaakov Avinu says this statement, Becha Yivarech Yisrael Leimor, Yisimcha Elokim Ephraim Menashe, when does he make that statement? After he sees their behavior towards one another. This was not scripted. This was spontaneous. He sees the way the brothers interact with one another. He sees, despite the fact that the younger one's been made greater, the younger one doesn't lord over the older one, and the older one doesn't begrudge the younger one this newfound fame. And Yaakov, remember, if you're Yaakov, you know also, you're pretty wowed by this. Why? Because this is one thing he never saw with his own children. And now he's seeing this now with his grandchildren. He's overwhelmed by this incredible display of mitos. And so what does he say? Spontaneously, not scripted, spontaneously he says, this is amazing. And I think halavai, Klal Yisrael for all the generations, should emulate this type of behavior. This type of mitos, one to the other, one not lording over the other, and one not begrudging the other for newfound accomplishment. This becomes the paradigm for interpersonal relationships throughout the ages. He says, "Lachin yisparuch yisrael davka bahem shekemohem lo tia kina v'tachrus shoreres b'nehem v'davar ze lo hayashchiach eitzel yeser achim ki bahem ne'emar v'yikanu bo achim." And he writes over here that, again, sometimes the most natural tensions in life exist among siblings. So the notion that you could see your sibling become greater right in front of your eyes and not lord over the one who's not as great and not begrudge the one who found the new greatness is incredibly amazing. So this is the approach of the Igor Dekala. It's a progression. The plan was simply to tell Yosef that they're going to be like Shvatim. Also, Ephraim is going to be greater than Menashe. Yaakov is blown away by the midos of his grandchildren and creates, or I should say, forever allows them to become the paradigm for interpersonal relationships. Now, what's interesting about this, what's fascinating approach, but of course, what seems to be lacking about it is that it's one episode, right? It's interesting, meaning, okay, this was amazing. We're not taking that away from Ephraim and Menashe. But still, it's strange. We can't find other great episodes. Why don't we tell our children you should be like Yitzchak Avinu, who was willing to sacrifice himself on the Akedah, right? Why don't we say you should be like Shimon HaLevi, who were willing to go ahead and cared for their sisters so much that they wiped out an entire city of... I mean, yes, this is an incredible accomplishment and an incredible display of midos, but it's a one-time event. And why does a one-time event earn them the right to become the paradigm for all future blessings? Which then leads us to approach number two. So this is the Aznaim HaTorah. Sirav Sirotskin takes another approach. And again, this is also a very well-known approach. See, he says, Ro es Ephraim Menashe. So what does Yaakov see? Now again, the common denominator between the Igor Dekala and the Aznaim LaTorah is that it's not scripted. That when Yaakov Avinu comes to this conclusion, that Becha Yivarech Yisrael Leimor Yisimcha Elokim Ke'efraim Menashe, that Jews for all generations will bless their children and Yishvei Ke'efraim Menashe, that was a response to events that Yaakov Avinu saw. So look what the Aznaim LaTorah writes. He sees Ephraim Menashe. What does he see when he looks at his grandsons? Bnei HaMishna LeMelech Mitzrayim. What does he see? He sees that they are the sons of the viceroy in Egypt. Right? So remember, they are born into a life of privilege. Asher kol hecholi hamado psuchim lifneihem. When you are the son of the viceroy in Egypt, remember, Yosef wasn't just the viceroy. Who was Yosef? Yosef was the savior of Egypt. Remember, Yosef was in certain respects even more powerful than Pharaoh himself, which essentially makes Yosef the most powerful man in the civilized world in his time. So anything these boys wanted to do, any door was open for them. Any governmental post they wanted would have been open for them. And we can only imagine the offers that Yosef got for Shiduchim for his two sons. And not because of their midos, but rather why? Because of who their father was. They were connected. So what happens? Belim Rosa, and despite all of that, Heim Boim Yom Yom Lil Mo Torah Eitzel Zikna Megoshen. And yet the Medrash writes, what were these boys doing each and every day? From the day that Yaakov Avinu resettled in Goshen, his grandsons came to learn Torah with him each and every day. Begito HaYehudi. Remember again, what was Goshen? Goshen was the ghetto, right? It was the voluntary ghetto, but the ghetto nevertheless. So they left the metropolis of Egypt, and they went to the ghetto of Goshen to learn with their grandfather every day. He says, Ve'inam misnachrim la'amam, and they did not disassociate from their people. V'ka'asher nigzira avodas parech alacheihem, hei mitstarfen el tsaras v'seva kla Yisrael, ve'inam hochim el amitshem leimor, anachnu noladnu v'mitzrayim, ואבינו המשנה למלך הציל את הארץ מרב, והאשירו אותו, ולפיכך מגיעות לנו פריבילגיות. Privileges. אלהים מקבלים עליהם את עול הגלות, והשיבוד יחד עם אחיהם. So amazingly enough, writes the Aznaim LaTorah. And when Shibud, when enslavement started, Ephraim and Asher could have very easily gone over to Pharaoh, to the taskmasters, and say, listen, give us a pass. We are the children of Yosef. Our father saved you, saved Egypt, and they probably would have gotten out of the servitude. But yet they didn't do that. Rather, what did they do? Elahim mekablim aleim es ol hagolos hashibud yachad imacheihem. They shoulder the yoke of enslavement together with their brethren. As Omer Yaakov, halavai sheyikhu b'nei Yisrael lemofes es b'nei Yosef. Shanoldu b'mitzayim kibnei malachim. As misirusam la'amam v'torosam, b'cho yivarech Yisrael le'mor, yisimcha Elokim ke'efraim mechenenashe. So amazing about Raisio's name of Torah. That's what is Yaakov blown away by? It's not by their midos. What he's amazed by is the fact that two children could grow up in such an alien society and still maintain an allegiance and a fidelity to the Abrahamitic Mesorah, to the Abrahamitic transmission. You see, you have to appreciate something. Up until now, monotheism was transmitted in a bubble. Right? Avram Avinu creates a home. Yitzchak Avinu is raised in that home, in the bubble of monotheism. Yaakov is born into that home and spends a number of years in that home also. True, Yaakov has to go for 2 decades out of the bubble, but then comes back to Canaan and what? Creates also like a spiritual monotheistic incubator for his own children to nurture them. So right now the way it's worked is that everyone and anyone who's had a meaningful relationship with God has grown up outside of the influences of the world. Ephraim and Manasseh are the first two children to be born in an alien, and not just an alien, but to be born in a theologically hostile environment. They are born into a polytheistic pagan culture. Egypt was known, it was the cradle of society then, but it was also probably one of the most depraved societies. The Egyptians were known for their idolatry and for their immorality. And Yaakov Avinu is simply amazed by the fact that these two boys have maintained this fidelity to their Mesorah despite being brought up in this hostile environment. And he sees this and he says, Becha yivarech Yisrael emor, yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim ke'Menasseh. Almost like in a moment of prophetic clarity, Yaakov Avinu understands that we are going to be spending many, many, many years in Golos. We're going to be spending a long time. The majority, the bulk of our national existence will be spent outside the land of Israel in hostile cultures. Therefore, how do we bless our children? We bless our children with spiritual resilience. We bless our children that no matter where you are, no matter who you are surrounded by, no matter how much your ideas and ideals are bombarded by the alien beliefs of the world in which you find yourself, stand strong. And if you want two good role models, you're right, do we know a lot about them? Do we know a lot about them? No. But you know the one thing we know about them? The one thing we know about them is they grew up in a hostile environment, and they maintained a true connection to their heritage. And says the Aznai Matorah, the truth is, that's all we need to know about them. Because that's the bracha. What a bracha. What an amazing bracha. We say to our children, we acknowledge the fact, we validate the fact, that most of us can't raise our families in a bubble. And because we can't raise our family in a bubble, what we ultimately want to tell our children is, be strong, stand up for what you believe in, and even if the world around you mocks, criticizes, derides what you believe in, remember Menasseh and Ephraim and stand strong. Okay, so these are our first two approaches for tonight. So again, the Igra de Kalo, understanding that the bracha is motivated by the fact that Yaakov Avinu is totally amazed by what he sees as the midos, the interpersonal kind between Ephraim and Menasseh, and therefore the bracha we give our children is a bracha of midos. That's really what we're giving our children. We're telling our children that, you know what I want? If you think about it, it's an amazing thing. We don't bless our children that they should be Tamidi Chachamim, that they should be Torah scholars. We don't bless them that they should do a lot of mitzvos. We don't bless them that they should finish learning Shas. We don't bless them that they should be the God Lador. What do we bless them? What do we bless them? You should be Baalei Midos. That you should know that if you are given gifts by God, do not use those gifts to look down on others. And if you see others are given gifts by God, don't begrudge others for the gifts they have been given. That's the blessing we give our children. That is the cornerstone of the Judaic identity. Igra Dekala, it's a response. Yaakov didn't script it. It's a response to the behavior he sees between his grandsons. Aznai Matorah Siratsky? No, more global. It's not really about the midos of the children. It's about the spiritual resilience of the children. They were in an alien culture, but yet maintained the true identity, Judaic identity, Abrahamic identity, monotheistic identity. That's what we bless our children for as well. Which then brings us to our third approach. So, look at number 8. So there is an amazing Targum Yonason. The Targum Yonason writes the following. And you see, I put a little biography here for the Targum Yonason, Yonason ben Uziel. So he writes the following: Uberechinun bayoma hahu lemeimar, and he blessed them on this day, saying, "Becha Yosef Bri, Yivarachun Beis Yisrael Yas Yenuga. So let's translate these words very carefully because they're quite profound. So on that day, Yaakov blessed Yomahu Lememar Becha, with you, Yosef Bari. Through you, Yosef, my son, people will bless their children. So this is amazing. According to the Targum Yonasan, Yisimcha, Ke'efraim HaMechem Menashe, is not blessing our children to be like Ephraim and Menashe. Who are we blessing our children to be like? Like Yosef. Becha Yosef Bari. It is through you. It is to be like you, Yosef. We're blessing our children. You should be like Yosef. Now, amazingly enough, before we even explain what this means, now we begin to understand the inclusion of Rachel Imenu. You see, the problem was that the previous two approaches, as fascinating as they were, for understanding why Ephraim and Asher become the paradigm of blessing, they don't help us understand why Yaakov felt the need to include the story of Rachel Imenu's death and his inability to bury her in Ma'aseh Machpelah. But look at number 9, and this is quite amazing. And then we'll tie this all together. So the Sfarno writes the following. Bederech ba'ot kivras aretz lavo efrasa. Listen to these words. Takef kishenasati me'osa ha'makom shehoye dvar ha'kel yisporach elai ba'odi baderech terem higi lebeis lechem ve'kbirah sham baderech efrat. So Sfarno writes that Yaakov says to Yosef like this: your mother died very suddenly. I was traveling. We had just started coming back from Laban's home. We had just gotten into Canaan. God had just spoken to me, telling me that I'm going to reestablish myself in Canaan. And Mamish, she died there in the middle of the road. Now, you have to understand something. So you've been to Eretz Yisrael. So you know where Kever Rachel is. And you know where Ma'aseh Machpelah is. So the truth is, it's not that far. It's not that far. So Yaakov, if you're already burying her by what today is known as Kever Rachel, why couldn't you just take her to Ma'aseh Machpelah? So there are a couple of different answers to this. So the Ramban, for example, brings down two answers. The Ramban says that Yaakov Avinu, it doesn't look like a big distance if you're traveling yourself, but if you're traveling with the whole mishpacha and the kids and the livestock, this becomes a long journey. And to leave Rachel Imenu unburied for those days that it would take to make would have been a lack of kavod ames. The Ramban brings down another answer, which is actually quite acute for the circumstances as well. Rachel Imenu died in childbirth. The Ramban writes that therefore there must have been an incredible loss of blood as well if she died during childbirth. The Ramban says to leave her in that state until you would get her to Ma'aseh Machpelah would have been a lack of kavod ames, a lack of honor and dignity due to her, even if you could have gotten to Ma'aseh Machpelah in somewhat an accelerated pace, it was appropriate to bury her there. The Sfarno says, I don't buy it. It doesn't make sense. You know, Kever Avos, burial in Ma'aseh Machpelah, was such an important thing. This was Rachel Imenu, the love of Yaakov Avinu's life. You know, there's only one story in the entire Torah of love at first sight. One story, and that is Yaakov and Rachel. One story. The connection between these two people is a different kind of connection that we see by anyone else. Why couldn't you take her to Ma'aseh Machpelah? So look what the Sfarno says, and this is quite amazing. He says, second line, number 9. Then what does Yaakov say to Yosef? V'chol kach gavra alai tirdosi va'avelusi shelo atzarti koach loholicha lebeis kvaras beis lechem. So what does Yaakov Avinu say? I couldn't. I was so overwhelmed by grief. I was so overwhelmed by loss. I literally translated, Gavra alai, tirdasi va'avilusi. My mourning, my sadness weighed down on me. Shelo atzarti koach, I did not have the physical strength. Loholicha lebeis kvaros beis lechem. It's not because of the loss of blood. It's not because it would have taken too long. Why didn't I take her to Beis Lechem? Why? I couldn't. I couldn't do it. I was too broken after her loss to pull myself together to take her to Ma'aseh Machpelah. Ve'ein safik. Listen to what he says. Ve'ein safik. Ki me'az haya libi chalal bikirbi. Furthermore, he says, you know, I have to tell you, and this is such a profound sfarno. Yaakov says to Yosef, I'm telling you something now, and he's only sure this as an adult. Libi chalal bikirbi means my heart was empty on the inside. That after your mother died, I was a different person. Velo shalot od bi yetzer hara, v'nechlesha ta'avasi, velo nishar bi koach laholid banim. So the Sfarno says, Yaakov says to Yosef, after your mother died, I was a different person. And I never really regained my life vigor and vitality. The same way that I didn't have the strength just to pull myself together, to take her to Masa Machpelah to bury her, I also didn't have the strength to really resume a familial life as well. Now what the Sfarno goes on to explain, just as an aside, is this is also how Yaakov is explaining the inclusion of Menashe and Ephraim among the tribes. Why are Menashe and Ephraim counted among the Shvatim? What Yaakov in Kivyakal is saying is what? Lihem. Lihem means what? Means what? I should have had those children. I should have been the one that fathered those children. I wasn't done establishing a family. But I could not go on after your mother died. When she died, I was a broken man. Which, by the way, just as an aside, not our topic for tonight, also gives us an incredible window into the way that Yaakov Avinu reacts to what he perceives to be the death of Yosef. It's an amazing thing that Yaakov Avinu, the Bechir, the best of the Avos, what does he do when he thinks that Yosef is dead? What does he do? What does he do? Correct, nothing. For 22 years, Yaakov Avinu does absolutely nothing. He shuts down. There's no dynamic activity. There's no spiritual accomplishment. Why? How does that, yes, the loss of a child, of course, is traumatic, but this is Yaakov Avinu. We would expect again, of course, life is not going to be the same, but Ariba. But now you see what he's saying. He was already emotionally crippled. He was already emotionally damaged because of the death of Rachel Imenu. And now again, when Yosef, who was one of the last vestiges of Rachel Imenu, he thinks he's dead also, then what happens? He's done. He's done. If I didn't have the strength to go ahead and take her to bury her in Masa Machpelah, then you can imagine how I must have felt when I thought the one son, one of the sons that I had from her, was gone as well. Now what's amazing about this is the following. So now, so let's bring this all together. So what the Sfarno is saying over here is that Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, I want you to understand why I'm including your sons in the count of my sons, ultimately because I should have had those children. But what Yaakov Avinu is saying is something so much more acute. What Yaakov Avinu is saying is, it's a deathbed admission. What is he admitting? What is he admitting? What is Yaakov Avinu admitting? He's admitting, I failed your mother. I failed your mother. I should have taken her to Marasa Machpelah. I should have buried her the way that she... It's hard for us to relate because for us today, Kever Rachel is a destination. Right? Kever Rachel is the place. But remember, when Yaakov Avinu buries her there, there's nothing there. It's literally, it's the side of the road. It's like a rest stop on the turnpike. I'm saying there's nothing there. So Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef on his deathbed, I failed your mother. I was overcome by grief. I was overcome by difficulty. I couldn't pull it together. And I buckled because of my circumstances. I encountered difficult circumstances, Yaakov says, and I couldn't do what needed to get done. But look what Yaakov says to Yosef. But Yosef, my son, you have surpassed me. Look at number 10. So going back two parashios ago. So the Torah tells us, when Yosef is now settled in Egypt, has become the viceroy, he has a wife, he has children. So the Torah says, Vayikra Yosef as Shem HaBachor Menashe. Yosef has his firstborn son, and he calls his firstborn son Menashe. Why Menashe? Ki Nashani Elokim es Kol Amali. God has allowed me to forget all of my suffering. The Eskol Beis Avi. And all of him allowed me to forget all of my father's entire home. The Shem Hasheni, and the second son, Kare Ephraim. He named Ephraim. Why? Ki Ephrani Elokim bi Eretz Ani. God made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. You know what the amazing part of Yosef HaTzadik is? That Yosef does not crumble. Yosef does not buckle. And amazingly enough, where do we see the resilience of Yosef? We see the resilience in the way that he named his children. Yosef has a realization that he is bound by the pain of his past, that he is bound by the pain of his circumstances. And so he realizes he has a choice. What's the choice? I could be tethered to the pain of my past, or what? What can I do? Or I could disentangle, I could detach myself from it. I could put it behind me with the hope of building a beautiful new future. If the pain of your past is holding you back, then cut yourself loose from it. Ephraim, ki Ephrani Elokim be'eretz ani. Does Yosef ever feel comfortable for a moment in Egypt? Never. Never. The Torah itself says that even when he is the viceroy, he doesn't eat with the Egyptians. Everyone knows that he's an Ivri. Everyone knows that he's not one of them. Even the viceroy, even the most powerful man in Egypt, even the one who saved them from death, is not accepted. Egypt is always Eretz Ani. It's always a land of my affliction. But you know what the amazing part of Yosef is? Ki Ephrani Elokim be'eretz ani. I have been able to create successes even in the midst of my land of affliction. I've been able to go ahead and find success even in the most hostile of environments. See, you want to hear something amazing? The names of Yosef's two sons are not simply the names of his sons. What are they? They're the two descriptive... They're the two windows into Yosef's life. That if you want to know who is Yosef, it's two words. He's a Menashe and he's an Ephraim. He's a man who's able to cut himself loose from the pain and the failings of the past in order to create a beautiful new future. And he's the man who's able to produce beautiful fruit even in the midst of hostile life circumstances. Yes, this is what he named his children. But interestingly enough, the names of his children reflect more on Yosef than what? Than they do on the two boys themselves. So now we begin to understand something amazing. So what's unfolding over here? What's unfolding over here right in front of on Yaakov Avinu's deathbed? Number one, deathbed admission. Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, Yosef, I have to bear my soul to you. And he bears his soul in number two. Va'ani bevoi mipadan mesa alai Rachel. No excuses. I could have gotten her to Maraseh Machpelah. I could have given her the levaya, the burial she deserved, but I broke down. I couldn't do it. I was crippled. I was overcome. But you, Yosef, you, my son, you have surpassed me. You have become even greater than your paternal example. Why? Why are you greater, Yosef? Because Yosef, you don't buckle. Because you don't succumb. Because no matter how difficult it becomes, you never throw your hands up and admit defeat. If the pain becomes too overwhelming, what do you do? What do you do? Kinashani. You forget it, so to speak, and you move on. If you find yourself in a land of hostilities, then what do? You find a way to produce beautiful fruit. I, your father, buckled in the face of adversity. I was overwhelmed by grief. I was overwhelmed by tragedy. You have found the ability to surpass. You have found the ability to transcend. You have found the ability to always be a Menashe and an Ephraim. But amazingly enough, what does Yaakov say? Yaakov does do something amazing. And that, he switches the order. He says, but Yosef, let me give you one piece of advice. Yes, until this point in time, you have operated as a Menashe and an Ephraim. But Yosef, the real recipe for success is that Ephraim always has to come before Menashe. What does that mean? That if Menashe represents this idea of introspection, contemplation, a person has to think about the things that are holding me back. That's really what Menashe is. Each of us have things that hold us back. Each of us have things that tether or shackle us to our present reality. And we have to have Menashe-like strength to be able to what? Detach ourselves from it and move on. But you know what the most important guiding light for the Jew is? You always, bless you, you always have to be an Ephraim. You always have to produce. You always have to do. You always have to accomplish. There is never one moment of inactivity for the Jew. I always have to figure out in what way am I presently growing. Yes, that growth has to be accompanied by Menashe introspection to see what are the aspects of my life that are holding me back. But Ephraim, the producing of the pre, the creating results, the doing the growing, Ephraim always comes before Menashe. And now we see something amazing. So this is what the Targum Yonasan meant. The Targum Yonasan said, we are not blessing our children to be like Menashe and Ephraim. For the simple reason that what? We don't know Menashe and Ephraim. So who are we blessing our children to be like? As Menashe, as the Targum Yonasan said, Ubarchinon b'yomahu lememar b'cho Yosef b'ri. We are blessing our children to be like Yosef. And by the way, the Lashon works beautifully. Why? Because what does Yaakov Avinu say to Yosef? Becha Yivarech Yisrael. What does Becha mean? You, singular. Not Bochem, not Bohem. Becha. I'm telling all future generations that you should teach your children, be a Yosef. And what does it mean to be a Yosef? Yisimcha Elokim Kefraim Uchim Menashe. Be the Yosef personality who always has the strength and resilience to accomplish, to grow, and to do, even in the most hostile of environments. Have the Yosef strength of personality to identify the things that are holding me back and have the strength to detach myself from those shackles. Look at number 11. The Targum Yonasan goes on and he says something so beautiful. He says, So interesting enough, when do we give this bracha to our children? So we're accustomed to this happening on Shabbos night, but it's not our topic for tonight. There's a big dispute in terms of when we actually give this blessing. Look what the Targum Yonasan says. It's quite amazing. Biyoma de mahalusa. When do we say it to a child? On the day of his bris. The bracha we give to a little boy as he enters into the covenant of Avram Avinu is not like you should be like Avram, not that you should be like Yitzchak, not that you should be like Yaakov. What do we say? You should be like Yosef. And how do you be a Yosef? By inculcating within yourself the attributes of Ephraim and Menashe. But one more piece. Look at number 12, and with this we'll conclude. The Aznaim Torah says so beautifully the following idea. He says, Becho Yivarech Yisrael. Now, what he also picks up is this idea, Bivanecha lo ne'emar, Ela Becho. Now, what's interesting is the following. It doesn't say through your children you should bless the Jew, which makes sense. Rather, it says Becho, with you, you should bless the Jewish people. But what does that mean? And this is amazing. Ha'adam hu achinuch shenosin labanav. And this is such an amazing insight into parenting. What is the most important aspect of chinuch, of education we give to our children? It's us. The most important piece of chinuch, the most important role model, the most important education I give my child is the kind of person I am. The way my child, the greatest lessons my child will really learn in life is by looking at the type of life I have built for myself. Ha'adam hu achinuch. It is the person himself who is the chinuch for his child. Shehu nosin levanav. V'im anu rotzim la'amod al ofyov shal adam bladas es toch tocho. Aleinu liros eizo chinuch hu nosin levanav. And if we want to see what the real essence of what a person really is, look at what a person is transmitting to their children. V'kava Yaakov sheka asher yasim le Yisrael leiv al achinuch. So the Aznaim Torah goes on to say something amazing. He says, you know what? If you want, and this is a very scary statement, but if you want your children to be a Yosef, what's the best way to raise children who are going to be a Yosef? Be a Yosef yourself. Becha Yivarech Yisrael. You want your children to be a Yosef, show them what it means to lead a Menashe and Ephraim life. And that will be the greatest chinuch. The greatest chinuch we can give to our children is not words we say to them, but it's the behavioral role modeling. It's the life we choose for ourselves. That ultimately is the chinuch that we will impart to our children. So bringing this all together, just to quickly summarize, we try to understand tonight this strange episode of where Yaakov Avinu goes in. Remember, three things are happening in the beginning of the parasha. Number one is the idea that Yaakov Avinu tells Yosef that his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, are going to be treated, are going to be endowed with tribal identities. Number two, he brings in the story of the death of Rachel Imenu. Number three, he tells Yosef that the younger one, Ephraim, is going to go ahead and eclipse the older one, Manasseh. And number four, Manasseh and Ephraim become the paradigm for blessing for all future generations. How are we to understand why Ephraim and Manasseh become the paradigm and why the inclusion of the Rachel Imenu story? So we have essentially, based on tonight's shiur, three different approaches. The Igra de Kalo, who explains why were Ephraim and Manasseh chosen? Approach number one, Midos. Because they become the paradigmatic example of interpersonal conduct. They become the example of what it means to have proper social interactions. In life, sometimes we possess more than others, sometimes others possess more than us. The goal in life is what? Never to lord over someone else because I have more, and never to begrudge someone because they have more. Yaakov sees this in his two children, grandchildren. He's overwhelmed by this, and therefore what? Spontaneously says, Yisimcha Elokim Kefraim Cheminasha. Second approach, the Azdaim Torah explain, not as much based on their midos, but more based on their life circumstances. First two children to be brought up outside of the bubble of monotheistic nurturing. First two children to be brought up in a hostile environment, and yet what? They maintained allegiance, fidelity to the Mesorah. Yaakov prophetically sees that we're going to have a lot of time outside of the spiritual incubator, and therefore says the same way these children held fast to their beliefs, so to future generations should follow the same example. Third approach, Targum Yonasan, it's not about Ephraim and Manasseh at all. Rather, who is it about? It's about Yosef. And according to this approach, bringing the Sfarno, there's a startling conversation that occurs here between Yaakov and his son Yosef. Yaakov admitting his failures. Yaakov admitting the fact that he buckled under the incredible tragic stress of life. Yaakov applauding his son's emotional and spiritual resilience to hold fast, to hold strong, even in the face of his own trauma. You have surpassed me, my son. Yosef is in a Manasseh and an Ephraim. But Yaakov gives him one piece of advice. Switch the order. In life, primacy has to be given to Ephraim. We always have to try to accomplish. We never stop accomplishing. We never stop growing. We never stop doing, no matter how hostile or difficult our circumstances may be. But we have to couple that accomplishment with Menashe-like introspection. Identify the things that are holding me back. And sometimes we can't. This is the incredible thing. Sometimes the things that are holding me back, we try to resolve them. But you know what the amazing part is? Sometimes you can't resolve them. What do you do with pain and with trauma that you can't resolve? What do you do with it? You become a Menasseh. You sometimes have to just detach yourself from it, let it sink into the depths so that you could rise up to the surface. Be an Ephraim, always accomplishing, and couple that with Menasseh-like introspection about the things that are holding you back, and go ahead and what? Find the courage to detach yourself from that. Rise to Aznayim Latorah. Therefore, what do we say to our children? We give our children the ultimate bracha. Be a Yosef. And by the way, none of this is mutually exclusive. They're all true. When we bless our children, what are we saying to them? We want you to be the paradigm of Midos. We want you to know how to interact with others, because in life you'll always find those who have less and those who have more. Make sure you exhibit the right Midos, both to your right and to your left. We want our children to hold true to their values, no matter what circumstances they may find themselves. But ultimately, what we want for our children is for each and every one of them to become a Yosef. We want them to be able to accomplish, no matter how adverse the circumstances. We want them to be able to let go of pain that they can't resolve. And as parents, the givers of chinuch, the conveyors of chinuch, we also accept upon ourselves that the best way to fashion and to nurture little Yosefs is to become one ourselves. All right, we'll stop over here. Thank you.